and welcome to the Data Protection Made Easy podcast on the 29th of August 2025. Joined today by Kane and Katerina, and we had a good session on the Online Safety Act. How did you think it went, guys?
I thought it was great. It was one of those really good sessions where time just kind of flies. You know, we had a few sessions like that, but before you know it, it's half one. But I thought, yeah, a really interesting topic. It's something that is very, very hot in the news at the moment. There's lots of stuff coming out about it, a lot of different opinions. I think personally, when we was talking about sort of like, so almost like the broader sort of societal implications, was probably the most interesting point for me, as much as it does relate to data protection. The topics were, I suppose, more largely about the act as a whole, and our sort of view and opinions of it. And for me, when we were talking about sort of the use and children in the whole and how they'll sort of perceive the act and how maybe there could be workarounds behind the act and maybe a lack of sort of diligence on the care of website runners at the moment, those are probably some of my favorite things to talk about today in the session. I don't know about you, Kate. I don't know what you enjoyed for today.
I think it was actually very interesting to explore, like, what these actually criticisms mean for the Online Safety Act. And when we talked about age assurance, robust age checks, what does that mean? We talked in touch a little bit about the guidance from Ofcom and facial age estimation. And we explored a little bit about what is that supposed to mean. But I feel I feel that is a very good point on the Online Safety Act, and it is a good first step to understand the risks that the this online world and the social media and so user providers have. But I do think in the end of the day, everything should be aligned with education and resilience and literacy from not educational sector and the parents' side. But yeah, what about you, Phil? What did you like the most on this session?
I think I liked most, we didn't really discuss it explicitly very much, but it's definitely there underlying everything, which is the interplay between the GDPR, the Online Safety Act, the Age Appropriate Design Code of Practice, Data Protection Act. So, you know, we talked about age verification. We talked about, you know, do you need to retain that data? If you do, then obviously regulated by GDPR. You know, and the risks of that information getting compromised. We talked, and that to me was the big takeaway for me, was like, oh, this needs a bit more thinking through about the interplay between all the different elements of legislation and code of practice to make the achieve the objective of online safety, but also achieve, you know, the objective of freedom of expression, and also achieve the objective of privacy. And there's more, I think, to think about and talk about that interplay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who knows about part two?
Yeah, it's very layered, I think. I mean, there's a lot of broader things to think about, but we won't give too much away. We'll let you dive straight into the session, and we hope you enjoy.
Put things in the chat. I'm hurrying through this because we're going to do these weekly now from now on. We had a little bit of a pause during the spring, so we missed them and the routine and the discipline of having to prepare for them, so we're going to go back to weekly, but we're going to do it in half an hour, hence the haste. But anyway, enough from me. Kate, Joe, hello.
I'm glad you addressed that you were going through that quickly. I thought you were on fast forward for a second.
You know me.
Is a 30-minute thing?
You know, no. I'm practicing for my speech this afternoon. So you know how much I adore public speaking. I'll be. So this afternoon, what's been going on? We've got our 10-year anniversary party later on today, which is in Leeds. If you're in Leeds today from 4 till 10, do feel free to drop in. We're at the Canary. So that's 10 years of data protection, people, and believe it or not, 5 years of the podcast. You can't believe we've been doing these 5 years virtually non-stop.
It's great. So, when we started in COVID, right?
We started as a result of COVID. I'm going to put up on screen the kind of the kind of planning that we, you know, limited range of planning that went into it before we actually started. The lunchtime takeaway was our concept, and you know, the menu, but warning, it may contain nuts. It usually does. So we started off in COVID, really, because people were wondering what COVID meant, what working from home meant. Our sales team couldn't actually talk to anybody. So we started them off as a bit of a thing, really. And then we, you know, we enjoyed them and people seemed to quite like them. So we carried on. And yeah, when we're looking today at the top 10 episodes, I think, aren't we? I guess that's our plan.
We do. Yeah. We do have a list of the top 10 episodes. Some of them a little bit unexpected, actually. Some of them very, very much expected based on what we've seen live. But there is an element of a discrepancy, actually, isn't there, in terms of what we're getting live and what we end up with in Spotify, which is, I think, relatively interesting. If let me throw my screen up. I've got the PowerPoint up and can have a little look at the top 10 best episodes as in terms of Spotify views. Not a personal ranking by any means. Because I'm not in all of these episodes. If I was ranking it, I would be in all the episodes.
I think probably Joe is the one that is the majority of
the Joe's probably in the most of these. Yeah.
Well, do you recognise any of them?
I recognise them all.
I recognise them. No, I haven't done them all because I went through a period of leaving it to Ollie and Dave. Quite a long period of just leaving them two to it. But thank you very much for the anniversary wishes. Yes, we're going to party hard. Mars has brought his guitar in as well, but I don't think he's going to use it in anger. But what's interesting about these top 10 listen to episodes is that, to me, there's three kind of core themes: SARS, DPAs, and changes, you know, in legislation. That ISO 27001 was a bit of an anomaly. I'm not sure that the general community of DPOs wanted to know about that in much detail, but you know, SARS is up there, DPAs. You know, why do you think that might be? Are these areas that we just want clarification or to discussion about? Are they grey areas? What's the story there, do you think?
That's kind of what I pinned it down to. I think if I had to pick topics that I think are probably more isolated topics in terms of what we get from the regulator, I would probably say it would be SARS and DPAs, if I had to guess. To be fair, DPAs surprised me a little bit, just because I feel like there's not always too much to say about them. However, risk is something that encompasses everything we're doing with personal data all the time. Obviously, risk is always a key focus. So I think that makes a lot of sense. I don't know if one of the sessions was me and Jazz that we did about DPAs. Yeah. I don't think so. It might have been, but it was just me and Jazz. I think that might have been my first podcast appearance, actually. But I do remember there's a sort of common anomaly and sort of a misunderstanding of how we approach DPAs and the sort of adoption we take as a business. So I think from the perspective of people listening, that's probably why I think it's something that DPOs are struggling with more than anything, which is obviously apparent in the increase in views.
Joe, you
he's disappeared, hasn't he?
Someone removed me from the thing a bit before. Oh God, what's he doing? He's after Top Trade Secret.
Thought you were a chatbot.
Yeah, possibly.
Someone is very happy to see you again.
we've got these are the 10 most listened to on Spotify, and there's three core themes here. There's SARS, there's DPAs, and there's kind of changes like Brexit and the Doer Act, and you know, so and COVID. So you know, are these particularly grey areas, the areas that DPOs want discussion, want debate, want clarification, that their line of thinking and their approach is, you know, relatively normalised to everybody else? Or is there, you know, is there something else there, do you think, why they're popular?
Well, I'd like to think that the DPA one's popular because the lovely listeners who join us have perhaps taken a risk-based approach. And, you know, with it being high-risk processing, it's quite a prominent feature of the DPO. And I think also with DPAs, when I was kind of doing audits with DPP, I think one of the kind of common themes was they were often, as I'd go and review DPAs, they were very quite superficial. So perhaps it might be an area that DPOs sometimes struggle with, specifically DPOs who have kind of been forced into the role, you know, kind of from like HR or IT. So I think perhaps DPAs is probably something that they want to get to grips with. I think SARS is quite obvious. I'm not surprised at all that that's on the list. given that, you know, everybody gets them a lot. I think it's the most common subject access request that you'll rights request that you'll receive. And then the changes one, again, I think that's quite obvious, you know, changes in the law, especially those in there, the big ones. You know, the Dewar Bill is the first reform that we've seen of UK data protection law since Brexit. And then obviously the changes of Brexit as well in there. So I'm not surprised at all with them being in the list.
Yeah, but I would have thought that sort of something like audits or ROPAs, you know, ROPAs are hard, I think, you know, audits.
I think
ROPAs
is a surprise, yeah.
I don't think ROPAs are necessarily hard in, I think the difficulty in ROPAs is getting people to actually come together and being able to foster a culture of being able to do it properly. I think the actual, like, what a ROPA is, what kind of information we expect in it is actually probably not to say it's easy, but I wouldn't say it's difficult. And I think there's enough out there and there's enough contextual stuff out there to understand what we require from a ROPA and what needs to be in there. I think
I agree, Kane. I think, but the complexity with ROPAs is finding the kind of the level of kind of how superficial or how detailed you go in the rope. I think that can be quite tricky. Whether that's enough to force people to come on, who knows?
And listen to us waffle about them. I'm not sure, because I think it's one of those things where I think a lot of ropers are superficial.
That's not really something we can answer either, is it? That's kind of based to you as a DPO.
But the debate on ropers is often, oh, can I use repurpose my AIR, my information asset register? You know, how granular do I need to be? You know, we've seen ROPAs where there are literally 1,000 rows of field by field, haven't we? When, in the early days, that's how we saw. I definitely remember seeing one like that. I thought, go on, blimey, how are you going to make this work? So I'm surprised that they're, because we've done it quite a lot of times in auditing as well. I think we've done that quite a lot of times. But I just wondered, you know, I understand the changes. When we're talking do it, everybody was trying to, including ourselves, hoover up as much as you could about, you know, what are the changes, what people think about the changes, when are they going to come into force, you know, because some of it wasn't that clear. So everyone was clamouring for data, really, information about it. Maybe similar to Brexit, but, you know, DPIA is quite formulaic, you know, and if you've got a process that delivers weak DPIAs because of the way that the colleagues are doing them, then you know that, don't you? It's not something you necessarily need to discuss and debate. I was surprised it was in there, to be honest. But
just to say something. I think I'm not that surprised that ROPAs are not included. I think SARS, aside from the basic and the straightforward reasons, the complexity, the volume, and the organizations need to deal with it, is the fact that it's actually the data subjects involved, so organizations need to actually provide a response. And if actually they do not require a response, the data subjects can go to the ICO. So in a sense, the organizations will have to probably, I don't know, like ICO complaint just, or ICO just knocking their doors. The same thing for potentially for the DPIAs, because it's true that the organizations may struggle a little bit because they need to kind of evaluating the risks. Well, it first identify the risks, evaluating them, propose mitigations, etc. But normally the DPIAs will go to, the risk assessments around them, they go to the boards, and before something might happen, if, well, needed, yes or no, so other people are involved. Because my involvement with ROPAs normally is people, when I spoke about ROPAs, they don't even know what I'm talking about. They don't even know where ROPA is, or because they don't even know or whether there is obligation, whereas DPIA or SAR, because I think other people are involved, automatically make the organizations work and being preoccupied or concerned about them. So I'm actually not very surprised, I think.
I think I tie the overarching themes, just kind of thinking about it now, I think I tie to confidence and a DPO's confidence in being able to deliver on these things. I think SARs are complicated, not in the nature of what they are, but the things that come around them and all the contextual things.
Yeah.
And I think it's the reason people want to tune in on those is because confidence in specific decisions, sometimes it's very isolated decisions, like, is this exemption the right one to apply? Is there an element of bias here? And that's not something that you can ever particularly guide on, because it's going to change so much from organization to organization. Similarly with DPIAs, you know, have we mitigated this risk enough? You know, you can't Google that and get an answer. You can't go to the ICO and get an answer.
Yeah, but you can do that with ROPA if needed.
Yeah, I think so.
You know, yeah.
Yeah, when we did our live, when we did our session in Leeds on SARS, again, I was surprised at how varied the interpretation was of something like manifestly excessive or manifestly unfounded.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the routine way that some organisations were just dismissing a SAR out of hand. You got this right. We think that's excessive. Back to you. You know, do what you want to do. Complain if you want to do. Now, that, I guess, is where what you're quite right, Kane. You know, people need the confidence to say, well, I think, you know, they might be doing it down the road, but, you know, the circumstances might be completely different, you know, to my environment here. So you do need a lot of confidence. And sometimes it's a lonely spot as a DPO, isn't it? You're having to make decisions. Everyone's looking to you to make the decisions, and you are working with shades of grey.
I've got a question for you. Is anybody surprised that there's not one on here that is sector specific? Now, I know that it doesn't always apply to everyone in the community, but often when we do sector specific, specifically when I was in sales and I was kind of driving post, like finding topics to cover on the sessions, I do a lot of outreach to a lot of people, try and get a lot of people on. And I think the education ones were really quite popular in the early days of the podcast. So are any of you surprised that you don't see a sector specific one on here?
I can't remember what the session is, but there was something that was very prevalent to healthcare. I can't remember. We had loads of people like inquire. We had Barry Moult on, didn't we?
I think but the ISO 27001, I got that. I think I was responsible for getting Stuart on here. And I think, did we have Barry on?
We had Barry on.
Which I think I do agree with you. Is it surprising if it is sector specific? I'm not sure, because obviously we get a range of different people from everywhere, but the sector specific ones were very popular, weren't they? But I don't know if they're popular in the realms of their contained space, in terms of, we've got to remember this is people that tune in live as opposed to like listeners as a whole, isn't it?
No, I thought this was streamed on
Sorry, I got that the wrong way around, which means that we might get more people on the live session because they have more burning questions. And I think that's maybe what it comes down to. I think some of our better sessions sometimes are sector-specific stuff.
Do you think that people have burning questions? I think, I don't know, people have burning questions. They jump on
people.
Chat over a sandwich or a pizza, the lunchtime takeaway?
I think sometimes it's just reassurance. I think we don't always break it down in the sense, and it's not like an FAQ kind of thing, and people don't fire stuff as, but I think there are occasions, especially with stuff like the doer and stuff. I think you remember from the doer session we did, Phil, it was just question on question on question.
Well, it was good, that session. Actually, that was a particularly good one, because, you know, we had corrections from the audience, and what we're trying to build is a community of data protection practitioners. We're just trying to facilitate or go somewhere and facilitate in that networking, that interaction, that collaboration, because we're all facing the same challenges. And it was really good to get that clarification. I had misread in my haste, legitimate interest,
recognize interest,
and it was good to get that, you know, corrected by the community.
Well, I think that's one of the better things, one of the best things for me about the podcast is the element of community we've got. It's not just us guys just kind of chewing it over. Obviously, we've also had the luxury of being joined by some very good guests, also some sort of past members of DPP like Jazz, David Holmes, Ollie, as well as people from the community who are always, you know, willing to jump in, have a go, like get involved with the rest of us. I think it always makes for the most engaging conversations from what I've found.
Yeah. Now, I'm just interested. I mean, Joe, you've come back on, which is fabulous to see you again, and thank you very much for joining. But you're now working as a DPO in a large organisation, not as a consultant advising. I mean, what's been the kind of any war wounds or trophies you want?
It's quite different. And it's weird to feel the pain of probably a lot of people that join you guys live every week. I think the biggest frustration is something that we all know, is that it's very hard to get traction with people. Trying to get, you know, if you're doing things on ropers, trying to get hold of key stakeholders can be quite tricky, because often the people you're trying to get hold of, you know, they're tied down in projects, and it kind of can limit you in areas. So I think that's probably the biggest frustration I probably feel at the moment.
I would like to do a question. What was the first thing that you did when you first arrived? So you can introduce yourself. Hello, Joseph Kirk. You're the DPO. What was the first thing you looked to?
The first two things I focused on was the cookie compliance. I'm sure that will come as no surprise. And ICO registration. Which was something that I picked up in the auditing that I did when I was at DPP, kind of, you know, looking into the revenue of an organization and just making sure that they're correctly registered with the ICO, because it's, although, you know, in doing this, the discrepancy between kind of the ICO registration, what you are registered, like, which is the correct tier, because it's based on revenue and or number
revenue
of
revenue or staff number. Or,
so yeah. which trumps the other?
I think
it's the
staff, I believe.
Does it make sense?
I think it's whichever is the greater.
I think
if you've
like,
got four employees, but your revenue's over 36 million, then are you in tier three or are you in tier one?
Yeah.
You're a top tier.
Yeah.
Right.
I think it's an element of both, isn't it? I think it's a very interesting point you raised. That's the first place you went. You know what? I don't think that's where I would have gone first, but I think it's a very like logical line of thinking. I don't think my brain would have ever gone there in the first instance. I think that's probably something I'd have like cleared up along the line, but maybe your superior experience in auditing, Joe, has maybe sort of like cued that in from that sort of compliance journey. From the auditing perspective, you kind of get the point zero, like,
yeah, it's like the first thing you look at when you're doing the auditing and like kind of. So what I essentially did when I got to the business was I did essentially a mini, well, not a mini audit, but kind of when
Step
I did audits, more kind of just having a look at what's in place, and you can gauge quite quickly just by having a scan through, you know, internal policies and procedures where the business is at. And in the auditing, the first DPP, the first three or four things you look at is ICO registration, ROPAs, IGF, those sort of things. So that was kind of the main focus.
The foundations.
And then of course, cookies. Yeah. Yeah. Foundations.
Did you just do cookies for the love of the game? Or was there a particular like thing that inspiring you towards?
Yeah, love of the game, mate. Yeah. It's something I knew I could get ticked off quite quickly.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
If there was any kind of it's quick wins and I can see pretty much straight away what's wrong and what needs to be corrected. Exactly, yeah, I just went for that.
Do you feel like that gave you a vibe of the business off from the offset? You know, if you're looking at the ICO registration and maybe it's not quite as it should be, or you're looking at the website and maybe, you know, it's run by a third party and it's a bit of a mess. You don't have to comment on if it's a mess or not, of course. But do you think by looking at those things first, that give you a nice vibe off the offset what the business is like from a compliance perspective?
A little bit, yeah. Yeah, I think when you look at kind of public-facing documentation, it kind of gives you, doesn't it, a good indication. If things aren't quite right there, then perhaps there might be some, you know, deeper issues at play. I think that's quite common with most organizations. I think that's a fair assumption to make. And it was often the assumption I made when doing audits initially, and it was often kind of proved as you dig deeper that kind of backs it up.
Because, you know, I believe that it potentially in the registration, sometimes, to be honest, I never did one myself. So I'm not sure how the process are, but I'm assuming that is the liability lies on the person that's actually applying for, because I'm not sure if you did it wrong or if you make any decision wrong. Would they ask you, say, well, hold on, because you are doing this wrong? Because I'm assuming that all the tiers and all the registrations could be challenged.
I don't know how it goes.
Yeah.
I would say it's on the controller. I've actually never seen an accurate one on any sort of discovery day or little audit I've done. I've never seen someone put themselves in the appropriate tier. And I think they're saving themselves like, what, at the end of the day, it's like 20
10 quid.
Yeah. Yeah. Like a tenner or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or maybe it's a knowledge, or it's just a quick, like, let's throw it in. I don't think the ICO cares enough to look, unless you're like Amazon and you're in tier one. They'll be like, hold on, that's not
yeah, but right. how do they police it? How do they verify it? You know, do they? Have they got the resources to?
They
don't enforce proper stuff, do they, really? You know, personal data breaches that keep happening in public sectors, you know, they just keep giving reprimands out. So I can't imagine they've got much appetite to go after controllers who are incorrectly registered.
They'll go after people who aren't registered, so they'll write to companies that are registered at companies' house. that haven't got a registration, but that's probably a kind of a formulaic algorithm that does that for
them. I imagine it's probably automated.
It should be a trigger. Yeah.
AI, I imagine.
I'd like to see their DPIA on that. Probably could if I made a Freedom of Information request. But I think it might be an interesting year for the Information Commissioner.
Well, they're gonna get changed. Now, did you see that the new guidance have put out on the complaints process and
recognised interest?
Yeah. Have you read through it? Have you made much sense of it?
A fair bit. It's about what I expected, to be honest with you. A lovely colleague of ours, Katrina, made an article on it, which was very good, sort of summarising those changes. So I had a look at both, and I think it's about what I thought, to be honest. But maybe I expected a little bit less, to be honest with you, knowing the ICO. So I was pretty okay with it.
I think, to be honest, there is nothing that it is an unexpected. But I think hopefully I think the deadlines for both of them are October, by the end of October this year.
They're for consultation, aren't they?
Yeah, they are consultation. That ends, I can see recognized legitimate interest deadline 30th of October and the consultation for complaints handling 19th of October. And both of them apparently June next year to be actually implemented. And I'm actually very happy with particularly around the consultation around the complaints handling, because I'm not sure about you guys, but I'm having a few consumers coming back to me and saying that they're receiving SARs, people are complaining about them, and if they should have already a process in place, yes or no, how do they should address these complaints if... Because the law is not implemented, is it?
There are a lot of references of the ICO
around like actually the response to SARS and the response to complaints to the organizations, saying if you can as an organization, please let the data subjects come back to you before we come back to us, because obviously it's a communication.
It's a lot more trouble, is it? The answer I don't want to deal with is what I've learned is that they're just not bothered for complaints. They don't care. However, one thing that will always remain is, irrespective of what the DORAC says, it's not going to stop a disgruntled ex-member of staff or a tenant who's just angry and they want to go to the ICO because it's this higher power and you know, there's fueled by more of a distaste for the organisation than to exercise their rights a lot of the time. Yeah. So are the ICO going to get less complaints because of it? No, I don't think so.
I think they might not get fewer complaints, but they will as a matter of course bounce the complaints back and say have you spoken to, but I mean it's an extra step in the process. Now, the bits of the recognized legitimate interests that I think that we all need to be familiar with are the crime condition, because CCTV might be affected by that, and the safeguarding condition. Again, a lot of our clients are in, you know, handling personal data of vulnerable people, and they need to understand what the safeguarding condition can and can't permit them to do as a recognised legitimate interest. So they're the two that I kind of picked. National security is all well and good, but unlikely to affect what we do as a business and many others. But those two in particular struck me as being, right, okay, these are going to be relevant to virtually every customer we work with, and therefore we need to get some, you know, familiarity with it and what the ICO's view is. That's what I thought anyway.
Great. Oh, sorry. I thought you were going to keep going.
No, I'm not going to keep going for a change.
I was thinking about still on the complaints one. Sorry. Just in terms of the requirements, aside from the acknowledgement of the complaints, you will have the investigation and obviously keep the complainant updated, etc. But will be a point around the investigation, and because the complaint will be around the data protection one, I feel that the organizations now, well, in the accountability side of things, the fact that it will be in investigation, I feel that all the now the departments and everyone in within the organization actually finally will be responsible of keeping data protection actually a main priority.
The complaint stuff has been interesting, and obviously in my role with managing the stuff on support, what I've found is that a lot of people are wanting to use us as that sort of like almost like a fire back off point for the complaint. It doesn't only serve as their way of kind of washing their hands with it a little bit, but serves as a way of that sort of unbiased and like, oh, here's a third party. I mean, I suppose it's an element of bias because we do have to, they're our customer at the end of the day, but here's like a third party, completely separate advice, because obviously if not the DPO, as we've sort of already mentioned, is sort of marking their own work. So I think that's something interestingly I've probably found the most at the moment. And a lot of things about the procedure as well. I'm surprised people asked about the procedure as much as they did, because I presumed it would be something that
pretty straightforward.
I thought so.
Now I hate to tell you this, but we've actually been half an hour. So again, we're gonna have to play this a little bit by ear, because in theory we're meant to stop now. So I don't think we've talked.
I can't believe that.
At all.
This is.
I mean, so, that was always gonna happen. You used to struggle to fit everything in an hour.
Yeah. But so at least
the idea of half an hour. Yeah, the only idea of half an hour is it's easier for people to pop into, hopefully. You know, it doesn't take up the whole of an hour, and hopefully it's easier for us to prepare for and deliver something that's... But if it's not meaningful stuff, I'm sure people will tell us and we'll take a look and make amends. So this is meant to be a gentle introduction back to the weekly podcast. We're going to do some every Friday, same type of thing. Miles is going to be, the fictitious Miles is going to be on the invitations. So... Thank you very much, everyone. I'm afraid to draw a line. I feel awful, actually, very mean. But I've got to go and get my glad drags on for the do. So thank you, everyone, for joining us. It's great to have you all here. It's great to see you again, Joe and Katerina, Kane and Miles. I will see you shortly in Leeds.
See you shortly, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you
very much.
Bye.
Have a great weekend.
Thank you, Joe.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.